Chapter 25. The bright morning Mediterranean sun had already begun baking the Aegean explorer's deck when Rudy Gunn stepped into the sunlight with the day's first mug of coffee. He was startled to see an unfamiliar stretch of Turkish coastline just a mile or two off the ship's side railing. He heard the whir of an outboard motor in the distance and squinted until he spotted the ship's Zodiac bounding over the waves toward shore. His groggy mind suddenly focused on the research project at hand, and he scurried to the stern of the ship. Making his way past a white submersible, he was disappointed to find the autonomous underwater vehicle lying securely in a padded rack. A large torpedo-shaped device, the robotic AUV contained a variety of sensors used to sample the water as it ran free of the ship. When he had staggered to bed 6 hours earlier, the explorer was tracking the AUV as it surveyed a large grid 10 miles from shore. Gulping a large swallow of coffee, he turned and made his way forward, then climbed 2 flights of stairs to the bridge. There he found Pitt studying a coastal chart with the ship's captain, Bruce Kenfield.
"Good morning, Rudy," Pitt greeted. "You're up early."
"I could feel the engines throttle down from my bunk," Gunn replied. "How come we pulled offline?"
Kamal received word that his wife was in a traffic accident. It's apparently not serious, but we put him ashore so that he could go check on her. Kamal was a marine biologist with the Turkish Environment Ministry who had been assigned to the Numa vessel to monitor and assist with the water sampling project.
"That's unfortunate," Gunn said.
"After the Zodiac returns, how long will it take us to return to the grid and resume operations?"
Pitt smiled and shook his head.
"We technically can't resume the survey until Kamal or a replacement is on board the ship. Our invite from the Turkish government specified that a representative from the Environment Ministry must be aboard at all times while we are conducting survey work in Turkish waters. At this point, it looks like we might be down for 3 or 4 days."
"We are already behind schedule. First our sensor flooded, and now this. We may have to extend the project in order to complete the areas we agreed to survey."
"So be it." Gunn noticed that Pitt seemed to share none of the frustration that he was feeling. It was uncharacteristic for a man that he knew hated to leave things unfinished.
"Since you returned from Istanbul, we've only had 2 full days of surveying on the new grid," Gunn said. "Now we go idle again, and you're not even upset. What gives?"
"It's simple, Rudy," Pitt replied. "Halting work on the algae bloom project means resuming work on an Ottoman shipwreck excavation," he said with a wink.
Less than 4 hours after the Zodiac was hoisted back aboard, the Aegean Queen reached Chios, dropping anchor 100 yards from the site of the Ottoman shipwreck. Little time had been spent examining the site after Pitt and Giordino's initial dive, barely allowing the ship's underwater archaeologist, Rodney Zeibig, the chance to stake an aluminum grid over the exposed portions of the wreck. Zeibig hastily trained a handful of scuba-qualified scientists in the art of underwater survey and documentation, then coordinated a careful examination of the wreck. Pitt, Giordino, and even Gunn took a hand in the dive rotation, photographing, measuring, and excavating test pits at various locations around the site. A small amount of artifacts, mostly ceramics and a few iron fittings, were retrieved as skeletal fragments of the wreck were exposed. Pitt stood near the stern rail of the Aegean Explorer, eyeing a growing pattern of whitecaps that dotted the sea under a stiffening westerly breeze. An empty Zodiac bounced wildly on the waves, moored to a nearby buoy that was fixed to the wreck site. A pair of divers suddenly poked to the surface, then bellied their way into the inflatable boat. One of the men released the mooring line while the other started the outboard engine, then they quickly raced to the side of the research ship. Pitt lowered a cable over the side and helped hoist the Zodiac onto the deck with the 2 men still seated in it. Rudy Gunn and Rod Zeibig hopped out and began stripping off their wetsuits.
"It's turned a bit bouncy out there," remarked Zeibig, a buoyant man with bright blue eyes and salt-and-pepper hair.
"I've passed the word that we're halting dive operations until the winds settle down," Pitt said. "The weather forecast indicates that things should be calm by morning."
"A good idea," the archaeologist replied, "although I think Rudy will be on pins and needles until he gets back to the wreck."
Find something of interest? Gunn nodded with an excited look in his eyes. I was digging in grid C1 and touched a large carved stone. I only uncovered a small corner of it before our bottom time ran out. I think it may possibly be some sort of monolith or stela.
That could add a clue to the ship's identity, Pitt said.
I just hope we don't have to share in her discovery, Zybig said, nodding toward the starboard rail.
Pounding over the waves just over 2 miles away was a high-performance motor yacht headed directly for the Aegean Explorer. It was Italian-built, with wraparound smoked glass windows and a large open stern deck. A red Turkish flag with white crescent and star flew from a mast, along with a smaller red flag that featured a single gold crescent. Though it was far smaller than a Monte Carlo show yacht, Pitt still could see that it was an expensive luxury boat. The three men watched as the yacht closed within a half mile before slowing to a halt, where it bobbed on the unsettled waters.
I wouldn't be too concerned about your wreck rod, Gunn said. They don't exactly look like they're here to perform excavation work.
Probably somebody just nosing about to see what a research ship is doing parked out here, Pitt said.
Or perhaps we're blocking the view of someone's villa on shore, Gunn muttered.
Pitt assumed that no one besides Rupe knew of the location of the wreck site. Perhaps he had already notified the Turkish Ministry of Culture, he considered. But then he remembered that Rupe's office had been burglarized and his chart to the site stolen with the artifacts. His concern was diverted when he heard his name shouted from the forward part of the ship. He turned to see Giordino hanging his torso out of a work bay door beneath the bridge.
Some info from Istanbul just came in for you over the wire, Giordino shouted.
Speak of the devil, Pitt muttered.
Be right there,
he yelled back, then turned to the other two men.
I bet that is Dr. Rupe's analysis of our earlier artifacts from the wreck.
I'd like to see his results, Zybig said. The two divers quickly changed clothes, then met up with Pitt and Giordino in the small bay, which housed several computers linked to a satellite communications system. Giordino handed Pitt a multi-page printout, then sat down at one of the computers.
Dr. Rupe also emailed a couple of photographs with the report, he said, tapping at a keyboard to open an electronic file. A close-up image of a gold coin filled the computer screen. Pitt quickly scanned the report, then passed it to Zybig.
Are we still looking at an Ottoman wreck? Gunn asked.
Almost certainly, Pitt replied. Dr. Rupe found a representative coin from a mint in Syria that he believes is identical to one of the coins in Al's lockbox. It dates to around 1570. Unfortunately, Rupe says he had to base the comparison on memory, since the coins were stolen from his office.
I'd have to agree with him, Giordino said. It looks like the same coin to me.
The mint marks were known to have been used between 1560 and 1580, Zybig said, reading from the report.
So we know the wreck is no older than 1560, Gunn said.
A shame the whole box of coins was taken, as that might have zeroed things in a bit more.
The other dating clue was the ceramic box that held the crown, Pitt said. As Lauren and I discovered at the Blue Mosque, the particular design indicates the tiles came from the kilns of Iznik. Giordino clicked to the next few photographs, which showed a number of known tile samples from Iznik. Unfortunately, the ceramic box was also taken from Rupe's office, so again we're working from memory.
His report indicates that the tiles incorporate patterns and colors that were popular with Iznik ceramics in the late 16th century, Zybig noted.
At least we have some consistency, Giordino noted.
I can also attest that from what I saw of the wreck's framing, it corresponds with known 16th century vessel construction in the Mediterranean, Zybig added, looking up from the report.
That's 3 for 3, Gunn said.
Which brings us to King Al's crown, Pitt replied with raised inflection. Giordino pulled up a new photograph which showed a detailed image of the gold crown. The seabed incrustations had all been cleaned from it, leaving a sparkling headpiece that looked as if it had just left the goldsmith.
Thank goodness my baby was kept safe in Dr. Rupe's vault, Giordino said.
Dr. Rupe calls this one of the most significant finds in Turkish waters, as well as one of the most mysterious, Pitt said. Despite considerable research, he was unable to utilize the crown's shape and size as a clue in identifying its provenance. However, after a thorough cleaning, he clarified the faint engraving on the inside of the band. Giordino brought up an enlarged photo of the crown while Zybig thumbed to the description in the report. The engraving is in Latin, Zybig reported with a quizzical look. Rupe translated the inscription as follows. To Artrius, in gratitude for capturing the relic pirates, Constantine. Rupe found records of a Roman senator named Artrius. It so happens that he lived during the rule of Constantine, Pitt said. Constantine the Great? Gunn blurted. The Roman Emperor. Why, he lived 1,000 years earlier. The room fell silent as everyone stared at the photographic image. Nobody had expected such a disconnect with the shipwreck's other artifacts, particularly by something as remarkable as the gold crown. And yet there was no clue as to why it was aboard. Pitt inched away from the monitor and stood up, finally breaking the silence. I hate to say it, he said with a grin, but I guess this means that King Al has been transferred to the Roman Legion.